Hello, my name's Marcus and welcome back to the Recovery Hub podcast. We've called this series Families Recover Too, dedicated to family members and loved ones of those affected by addiction. Thank you to North Wales Area Planning Board for funding this project. In this episode, you'll be pleased to hear that Caitlin's come back especially to interview Jamie. Jamie, I've known all of my recovery because he got clean at the same time I did, pretty much. I might have a week or two on him. He got clean down in Colwyn Bay in a residential down there and threw himself into fellowship. He's become a really good friend over the years. He helps a lot of people into recovery and he's just such a good friend. Funny, funny boy. With Jamie, we found yet another perspective with families. Now, in Jamie's case, it's the family that Jamie created in addiction that actually got him clean, that pulled him into recovery. And I think one of the toughest things for Jamie was saying goodbye to his son when he had to go to prison. And that just shocked him into wanting to change his life. It's yet another powerful episode from us, and we hope you enjoy it.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So you know Marcus, you and Marcus are like mates.
We come about at the same time.
So what was your like substance or of choice? And when did it start for you?
My drug of choice was more. I couldn't get enough of it. I started drinking at a young age, probably smoking first, sorry, at the age of 10, 11. I was hung around with older lads. So when they went to secondary school, they started drinking. So I followed suit and started drinking bottles of cider on the park of a Friday night after school.
Yeah. Same with me, really. Like, I used to hang around with older kids as well and used to like doing it on my own as well, you know, like once I got a taste of it. I know everyone's different. Like, some people don't like really like the taste and stuff. But for me, it was like, I knew it was wrong, but I just wanted to do it even more then. Do you know what I mean?
Same here. I hated it. But I loved it at the same time.
That's it, though, isn't it? Yeah.
And you wake up in the morning, what did I do last night? And then your mates are telling you, you've done this and this, and you feel a bit gutted, and then it'd soon pass. Yeah. And you do the same the following week.
You say, I'm never doing it again, and then you know, on the weekend.
Yeah, back at it.
So when did it get bad for you? Like,
I'd say it got bad before I even left school. Obviously, I was drinking Fridays. Then it went Friday, Saturdays. Then weed come in where I've started smoking weed every day. And then before I left school, amphetamines come in. And basically, I'd say it was out of hand before I'd left school.
Yeah.
But it seemed normal because all my mates done it. But I was always the worst one out of a lot of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, just carried on basically because I thought I enjoyed it.
I know that feeling though, being the worst one, like out the group. Like I nearly got like an ASBO in school and I went to a private school. And like they were like gonna kick me out and stuff, and no one else was as bad. Do you know what I mean?
As you, yeah.
Yeah. So like, when did you like get help and stuff? Like, what made you?
Basically, I had many years. Obviously, I left school at 16, and I was flat out at it. Luckily enough, I got a good trade. I'm a plumbing and heating engineer. Always worked from a young age. Plus, sold drugs. But I'd say it was early 30s when, well, it was 32 when I got the help. And that was through three prison sentences, the loss of my mum and my dad. There's just loads of carnies that come along before I got clean, basically.
God, yeah, all that, like, stuff happening as well, like, must take its toll.
Yeah, it did. And to be fair, I come from a dead, loving, caring family. And to lose me, I lost my dad first, 2 days after my son's first birthday. And that was heavy. To be honest, I lost a friend 2 years previous to that in a car crash and he was killed outright. I thought that's what was the turning point in me using was. Looking back, I know I weren't right from school.
Yeah.
But the loss of me mate Nicky and then me drug use went to another level, drinking and drug use. And then obviously the loss of me dad. The year that me dad died, I had a lot of life-changing things, which was I got a girl pregnant behind me, childhood girlfriend, which I left her of, I think it was 5 or 6 years and got with this other girl. I set up my own business. My dad took ill with leukemia and then my dad eventually died. So I I started earning good money, but I was spending good money on drugs.
Yeah.
I think I saved £52,000 up in nearly 12 months and I spent it all on cocaine.
It's mad, isn't it? That's how powerful this fucking disease, this illness is.
Yeah. But yeah, I've come out the other end many moons later.
Yeah. So obviously today you're wearing your work clothes.
Yeah.
So tell me about your business. Like, how did, was you working for someone else? What, how did you train for that? And what made you decide to set up your own business?
Well, it all started the plumbing as a child. Basically, as a kid, I always wanted to be a mechanic. Because I love cars.
Yeah.
My dad worked away most of my childhood life. He was a welder, but he worked offshore on the oil rigs, Heathrow Airport, the Channel Tunnel. And what happened was when I was 13, he'd be away most of the 6 week summer holidays. So he sent me the first year in secondary school. He sent me with his mate, Jamie, a mechanic. The following year, he sent me with another good mate of his who was a kitchen fitter, John. And then the last 3 years, he sent me with my uncle, who's a plumber. At which point, I always had a paper round and I worked in the local hotel up in Pulford, the Grosvenor, cleaning pots. I was always obsessed with money.
Yeah, and earning it by the sounds of it, yeah.
And selling a bit of drugs here and there.
Yeah.
But as I got older, I said to my dad, why out of the four kids was I the only one who was sent to work? And he said, because you're a naughty little git. And he said, I always could keep track on you when I was away. And I knew you couldn't cause havoc Monday to Friday because you'd be working and you'd only cause havoc from 5 till 11.
Oh, my God.
So, and I hated him for it for many, many years. But then as I got older, he was doing me a favour.
Yeah.
So basically, I went to college full-time at the age of 16 to do plumbing. It took me 7 years to pass a five-year course because I was naughty and I kept getting kicked out, kicking off with the teachers.
Yeah.
And I think on my second year, my Uncle Neil took me on and gave me a modern apprenticeship, which I was quite fortunate about.
Yeah.
I think I set up my own business at the age of 23.
Wow.
Which I'd say it was doing well. I earned a lot of money. It weren't legitimate. And then my dad took ill, so that's when everything went peak-tong, basically.
Yeah.
That was in 2007, my dad died. 2009, a failed suicide attempt put me in jail. And I'll never forget it now. My plumbing business was all over the billboards on the Wrexham Leader throughout the town. And I thought, everyone said your business has had it. Luckily enough, a few years later, got into recovery.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I trade under? Because I thought, I need to change my business name. And I spoke to someone in recovery and they go, no, you're no longer that person you were. So I set my business up the same name that was on them billboards.
Yeah.
And my business is doing better now than it ever has.
Good for you, staying true to yourself.
Yeah.
How's like stigma affected you?
Stigma?
Because that's a big thing, isn't it, for people?
I don't know. Regards to using or getting clean or both?
Both.
I was always proud of my drug use.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be the one who'd be in the street smoking a joint, sniffing a line off the bonnet of my car. I was quite proud of it. So I didn't give a shit. You know, I bumped into a mate the other week and he said, I was talking to a lad from Oswestry Street about you and he just said, you're mad. He said, you pulled up on a car park. He said, there were police everywhere. You just got out and racked a line up on the bonnet and said, F them. What are they going to do? And you sniffed it in, like, more or less when the police were there.
Yeah. Like in front of their faces, yeah.
And it's the same as my recovery. I'm quite proud of that. So yeah. I'm quite open about it. It's like now I'm doing for a couple of private school teachers up in Llangollen and I've told them everything about me.
Yeah.
Apart from going to jail. But I will tell them in time. And they've actually gone away this week and they've left me with their house. And they've got a lovely house, £500,000 house.
Wow.
And they trust me.
Isn't that the greatest thing though as well? When you're in addiction, no one trusts you. And I don't know if you're the same as me, but for me, when I'm over a year and just over 4 months now, clean and sober. But in the beginning for me, it was like a bit hard with my family because like they didn't have that trust there.
No.
So like earning trust for me is like being a really big thing.
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
It is. I don't know, I don't want to say I'm fortunate because I'm not, because I've lost my parents, but I've had nobody really to have to prove to other than myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I come about when my son was 8. So yeah, I've had to prove to him, but he was still a kid.
Yeah.
So realistically speaking, I know I've got a brother and sisters. I don't know, my nan, she sadly passed away since. My nan always knew I was a bit of a lad, but
Yeah.
I think she knew when I come about. I never had, I don't know, it, I have had no one really to prove to other than myself. Yeah. I haven't got a family to please. So I just do my own thing. Obviously now I've got a girlfriend and we've got a 9-month-old baby. So, but my girlfriend's in recovery.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's like, that's another thing in itself. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Relationships.
Yeah. Do you mind me asking about that?
No, not at all.
Cool. So like, what's your relationship life like with your girlfriend? Because obviously yous are both in recovery. How does that work for you? Like,
it works well. We get on well, but we do have our disagreements because we're both set in our ways.
Yeah.
She probably tells me to F off more than I tell her because I think I'm always right.
Yeah.
But she does. I remember doing work for a guy in AA who's 40 plus years sober and he's been with his wife for many, many years. And when I went to fix a kitchen unit for them and they were both there and they were both bickering. And I said to the guy, I said, how have you made it work? Because you and your wife are exactly the same as me and my girlfriend, Joanne. And he went, we've been like this since the day we got together and we're in, he's getting on now.
Yeah.
And he said, you've just got to learn to say yes. I said, I don't want to say yes. And he said, well, if you want an easy life, you've just got to say yes. Yeah. And still to this day now, however much I don't want to, when I don't always say yes,
yeah,
most of the time for an easy ride, I'll say yes. And I'll just agree and go ahead with it.
It's going back to that powerlessness though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I hate admitting that I'm powerless over anything.
Yeah.
It does me head in. Like, I don't know why it infuriates me so much, but sometimes we have just got to hold our hands up and admit that we're powerless.
Powerless, yeah. Just got to let it be.
And it is over everything, even like little things like that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, it's little things for me anyway. So, you know, when you started your business back up, when you got help with your problems, like your addiction issues and stuff, did you go to a treatment centre or anything? Did you do 12-step recovery? Like,
right, well, what happened with me was I think that when that failed suicide attempt was a cry for help in 2009.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting an 18-month prison sentence. I went to the doctors, told them all me problems, and they give an addict drugs.
That's what they always do.
Yeah, which is not the answer for my type of addict.
No.
So I'd done my prison sentence and I remember I'd done 9 months in all course and I remember being in there, I'm not going to do this, I ain't going to do that, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And then as soon as I got out, I was back to what I always was. 6 months later, I was back in jail for domestic on the mother of my first child. Same again, I'd 3 months in there, thought I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. Get out, back to as I was. And then I had a good stint from 2011 till 2014 of out of prison, but I caused mayhem.
Yeah.
I didn't get caught for nothing.
So then you carry on then, don't you?
Carry on.
Yeah.
And then how I come into recovery was I was on the run from the police and I was walking around with one of them bags for life from Lidl with all my gear in it, ready to go back to jail. Just going from house to house, going to my sister and she was like, Jane, you can't keep living like this. I said, well, I don't want to get lifted off the road and end up in prison SU clothes. And cut the long story short, the week that I ended up handing myself in, my sister had my son. I always had him on the Wednesday and I said, right, I'm going to see me lad Jake on Wednesday and then I'm going to go and hand myself in. Anyway, we went to me nan's at the time, me nanny, she was still alive. And Geordie said, me older sister said, whatever you do not tell that boy that you're going to prison.
Yeah.
And I took me lad in the garden and I basically just picked him up. He was about 7 or 8 at the time. And I just said, I told him I was going to jail. And he broke down and he gripped hold of me. And he wouldn't let me go. And he was sobbing his heart out.
Yeah.
And I was the same. And I just remember thinking to myself, my mum and dad never done that to me. So what? I stayed in the garden for about 10 minutes. I went in and Jodie said, you have another? And I said, I've told him. And she said, you're joking, and I haven't used ever since.
Wow.
That was on a Wednesday. I went into the police station on a Thursday morning with my bag, and I said, I've come to hand myself in. And then they basically said, you've got options. I go, I'm on the run, and you're giving me options. They said, you can either go to Bangor today or come back tomorrow in Wrexham. So I said, well, I'll come back tomorrow. I said, but can you radio all your officers? I don't want to get lifted without this bag.
Yeah.
And they were like, right, so we rung round anyway, cut along. So I went out, I think I stayed in my sister's, and then I went on the Friday, and I ended up back in prison, by which point I was probably about 10, 11 stone. and I've always been about 14, 15 stone. So I remember getting back into jail, and I bumped into a lad, Gareth, who I was in prison with in 2010, who we went to the gym together. And he basically said, "You look rough." And he was on the gear, the smack. And he basically said, "There's a course in here, it's called SOAR, Stay Out and Recover." He said, basically, you go on this course for however many weeks, and then you go into a rehab on release. And I thought, right, I've been homeless for years.
Yeah.
I thought, right, I've got 3 months in here, and I could go on a rehab for 12 months. That's like 15 months with a bed.
Yeah.
So I tried getting on this course, but you needed something like 4 to 6 months in prison to get on this course, and they weren't going to allow me because I only had 6 weeks left of my course by this time.
Oh, yeah.
So my sister wrote a letter to the governor, which later got read to me in this course, pleading that I needed it.
Yeah.
So they got me on this course, and I'd done steps 1, 2, and 3 in Narcotics Anonymous in there. And luckily enough, there was a big change in myself in there. The lad who got me, Gareth, we were padded up together, he was on that course. He was smoking smack in our room.
Yeah.
I was holding the foil for him, and I stayed clean. And I done that. And I'll never forget it. The day I got released, and there was this guy called Gary who took us on it. He was doing the main chair in an AA meeting on the day I got out, on a Thursday in Queen's Park. And he said, "I'm doing the main chair tonight, mate. I expect to see you there." So I thought, I'll give it a go. And that's what I'd done. I got out of prison, and I went to a meeting every day for 3 weeks before I went into the supported housing, which was like a drug rehabilitation place. Which I stayed there for 4 months.
Wow.
And just done what I had to do, basically.
Yeah.
And that brought it to, I think it was January or February 2015. And I've been clean ever since, basically.
That's amazing. Like, you've been through a lot.
Yeah. If I can do it, anyone can do it.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Honestly. Do you know, like, your relationships with people that aren't like us in recovery, how do you find them relationships, like, now that you are, you know, in recovery and, you know, you...
I struggle with people. Well.
Do you?
I don't know. It's like I've got my own business.
Yeah.
And people keep saying to me, "Take more lads on, I can give you this and that." But it's like I'm a bit of a perfectionist in what I do.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got to have it right, you know. So I do struggle with other people. I can speak to people all day. I'm a people person.
Yes, yeah, same.
But I can't. People that drink, I can't. I've had a lad today who's supposed to give me an hand, and I've spoke to him. He reckons he's on another job, and he's pissed. And it's like, I can't be doing with him. It's 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. Yeah. And I just like, I'm going, and I'm going to have to block him. I can't be doing with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can get on with people, but I do struggle with some.
Yeah. Do you feel like you change around people? Save people that aren't in recovery, do you feel like you put on a different persona when you're around those type of people?
I notice my bad habits come out if I spend enough time with my old associates.
I'm
so
like that.
What I tend to do is, every person that I go and see are in recovery. All my friends now are in recovery.
Yeah.
And I can accept it. I'm nearly 40. You know, them people that I thought were my mates from the day I was born to 32, guess what, I don't hear off them, so are they really mates?
Same. It's mad, that, isn't it, the way that happens?
And it's like when I lost my mum and my dad, and it's not their fault, they're just sick individuals. It's like when I wanted somebody to speak to, I didn't want a line of coke and I didn't want a beer, I just wanted to say, "Listen, I'm hurting."
Yeah.
But none of us are programmed where we're from to...
Support each other in
the right way. All it is you have a line, have a drink,
have a joint, yeah,
and we'll get you in that rehab quicker.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happened, but they're not to know.
Yeah.
Part and parcel of recovery, isn't it?
So are you and your girlfriend go to meetings? Like, are you in NA or AA?
Girlfriend's in NA.
Cool.
I don't do as many meetings as I should. I used to, up until me and my girlfriend got together.
Sorry, how did you just meet, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, we met in a meeting, but I was with another girl at the time, and it weren't nothing like that.
Yeah.
And then basically we went to Portugal, and I went with another girl, and we split up out there. And me and my girlfriend now just got speaking.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. And then months later, we started speaking, and we got together, and that was nearly 5 years ago.
Wow.
And since then, we've bought an house. we go an endless amount of holidays, and we've got a lovely little baby girl, Dottie.
Oh, that's amazing.
9-month-old. Yeah.
That's lovely. So sorry for interrupting you. Back to the question. So your girlfriend's in NA.
My girlfriend's in NA. I used to be a big NA, but I go to AA because I got more. Basically, when I come about, there was only one NA meeting in Wrexham.
Yeah.
So I had to go to AA. So I stayed clean through AA.
Yeah.
And they were the people who helped me. So one of my best mates now is in AA. Who's a heroin, recovering heroin addict. So it's sort of, AA suits me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I get that completely, yeah.
But I was drugs. My girlfriend goes to Narcotics Anonymous. She goes religiously. I just go as and when I feel I need to go. It's no excuse. I should go more, basically.
No, but I'm the same, to be honest with you. Life happens. Yeah. And, you know, I know that those people are there for me.
No matter what.
No matter what. It's unconditional. And also, I know that in the beginning when I first got, like, sober and clean and got out of rehab, the rehab that I was in, I'd think if I ever miss a meeting and I'm not in the rehab anymore, as if, oh, I can't go, people will think, why wasn't she here last week? But it's not like that at all. If whatever day it is, however long, however much time's passed, I'll always be welcome there. You know, they've always got a space for me. I think that's important as well to know, because
yeah,
you can start to isolate yourself, but
yeah,
life happens, doesn't it, you know?
The thing is with me, I got my own business, so I've always got something to do.
Yeah.
And it's no excuse, because at the end of the day, I'm only sat here today because of the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
But I know if shit hits a fan, I know I've got that fellowship and I can go to a meeting every single day and no matter what, I'll be okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Which I never had that prior to this.
Yeah, and you know what? You're sitting here now with me and you're telling your story. I think it's amazing.
We're both miracles, really. Well, yeah. We all are, aren't we?
I know.
The thing that does my nuts in, oh, I've got loads of people, like, who's saying, oh, I want this, and then you tell them, and then they, like, phone you up and go, is there anything else other than their meetings? It's like, trust me, if there was something else, I wouldn't be sitting in their meetings now. And they're like, there's got to be. And it's like, well, when you find it, let me know.
Yeah, when I was, because I did 10 months in the rehab I was in, my dad used to, you'd have a phone call for 10 minutes each night. When I'd be on the phone to my dad, in the beginning, say 6 months into my treatment, he couldn't understand why or how it's a mental illness. And he'd go to me, I've seen this documentary, isn't there some like pill you can take? And I was like, Dad, if there was a pill you could take, I'm sure everyone would be taking it.
Of course he would, yeah.
Just about working on yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because for me, what it all boils down to is self-love. Like, you want to be numb to everything because you can't sit with yourself. You can't sit with this head.
No.
Do you know what I mean? That's why we do what we've done, you know what I mean? And even at a young age.
Quieting it down, quieting the head down, yeah.
At a young age, like, anything can be traumatic at a young age. It doesn't even have to be anything major. That's what I learned. Anyway, you could like grow up in a household where there's like shouting and screaming. That could make you anxious growing up. Anything really. And that's the thing I didn't realise. And that's what I used to beat myself up about. Like, but why am I like this? There doesn't need to be one reason why. It just is the way it is. And I've got different ways to cope with this head now. Do you know what I mean?
I'll be honest with you, I'm glad I am who I am.
Yeah.
I got a good life today.
Yeah.
And up until I got clean, I thought I had a good life and it weren't.
Yeah.
You know, and to think on that year I tried killing myself, from then till now, I've only been living 8 years and I've got a baby daughter and I got everything I need, me two dogs.
Yeah.
And I'm the happiest I've ever been. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had everything back then. Business, money, three-story house, and it was nothing because I weren't right inside.
Yeah. It means nothing because you didn't have anyone to share it with, and you, like you just said, you weren't living your truth, you weren't living your best life, you weren't living the authentic you, but you are today.
Yeah, keep it simple.
That's it. Yeah. So what advice would you give to, like, people that want to get into recovery?
Just don't think about it, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can I don't know, it's easier, isn't it? You're only gonna do it when you're ready. It's like, I know when we lost me mum, which was probably, I think, a year or so, my sister wanted to pay for me to go to rehab.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So you've either got to keep at it until you are ready. I don't know, them meetings are where it's at for me. I got into it through prison, so I was quite fortunate regardless. Yeah. But I know if I'd have been offered that sooner, I think I'd have took it because I'd had enough. But there was no way out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go and see a doctor and you think, he knows, and they don't.
Yeah, they're not qualified. Unless they've been in our shoes. Exactly. They're not really going to know.
No.
Are they?
No. Or... And we're never going to understand ourselves, really, are we?
No.
As sad as it is, we just got to keep doing what we're doing as long as we don't pick up a drink or a drug.
That's it. All you've got to do, just don't pick up.
It's the main thing.
It's a simple programme.
For complicated people.
Yeah. I just need to not get easy and simple mixed up. It's not easy, but it's simple if you let it be. Instead of complicating everything in our heads, you know. So, like, relationships.
Yeah, but basically, me older sister, we dead close, and then what's happened is in the past 12 months, we've sort of not spoken. Why it is this work I got offered.
Yeah.
Her fella was on it. And basically, I've gone on it, and they didn't like it, and it's like, well, I'm taking work off him. But bear in mind, Lee's got 30, 40 lads.
Yeah.
And there's me. So how much work can I take off them? So
yeah.
I haven't spoke to him properly. Well, I haven't spoke to Lee for over 12 months.
Yeah.
And I've spoke to my sister about 3 times, which is a shame, really. But at the end of the day, the way I see it is I've got to do what's right for me. Lee's lads don't pay my wages. I pay my wages. So at the end of the day, I can't not take work on just because my sister's fella's on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. It's one of them.
And if you haven't done it with any, like, malice
no.
behind it, then?
All I've done is just done it just to provide for my family.
That's it.
You know, but...
Like, your intentions are good now. You might have not have been when you were in addiction, but...
No.
They are now.
Definitely weren't in addiction. But I don't know, it's weird. I always done all right when we work and me using.
Yeah.
Because I've never been one for stealing. Like I say, I'll do a job and I'll do it right. I always have, because I've been trained right. But then out of work, I'd be up and down the country doing what I do.
Yeah.
Smoking and sniffing, but still be there the next day and do my job, because that's what I do.
No, but you seem to me, you're one of those people, like you just said, no matter what, you've always been a grafter. Like, you get up and you show up and you do the job.
I'm a workaholic, my missus keeps telling me.
Yeah.
It's like the weekend, what do we do? I work Monday to Friday, and then if someone phones me up to move a car or whatever, I'll go and do it. But we had Saturday off, we went to a wedding in Bolton, because that's where my missus is from. And then we drove to London on Sunday, me here and the little one and the dogs. And that was to pick a car up. But I got just short of £1,000 to pick this car up. So I said, well, we'll go halves on the money. So I give her half the money because she's off. She's not getting paid.
Yeah.
Because we've had the little one. But I'm not shy of work, basically.
Yeah.
I'll go out all night if I have to. If the money's right, I'll work all night.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because I don't need it.
Is it just like, do you get a buzz out of it? What you thinking is?
Maybe it's because I don't like being sat still. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's like, I can relate to that with cleaning. I can't stop cleaning.
Can't you?
Like, I have to do it, even when I know something's clean. I'm thinking about it now, but like, oh, yeah, I'm going to limp roll my bed when I get home. Do you know what I mean? It's not normal, but I think we'll always have a bit of that.
Yeah.
It's there, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's how you keep it in check, isn't it? You know?
I think I'll always work. It's not a bad thing, though.
No.
In the day, got a good life because of it.
As long as it's not affecting you or your family, you know.
No.
But honestly, thanks so much, Jamie, for coming in today and having a chat with me.
It's all right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Well, you've come to the end of the Families Recover 2 series. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've got plenty more lined up for Eternal Media's Recovery Hub podcast. Keep an eye out on our social medias or your RSS feed, and they'll drop in to wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks again for listening. We'd just like to thank everybody who's been a part of this series and contributed. Anything that's touched you, anything that meant anything to you along the way, anything you can relate to, it would just be fantastic to hear from you. You can get in touch through hello@eternalmedia.co.uk. And if you put in the subject line, Families Recover Too feedback, that would be fantastic. And we'd love to hear from you. Thank you.